call to order the Ways and Means Committee hearing. We'll kind of jump around the agenda this morning. What we don't finish, we will likely come back after session to finish. We're going to start with Representative Downey's bill, House File 191. We do not have a quorum yet. I will let you know when we do so we can officially take action. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 191 is a collaboration between myself and Representative Kahn, who has been working on this consolidation of technology functions in the executive branch agencies for many years. And it is also moving in the form of the DE3 that we have here, Madam Chair, in the State Government Finance Omnibus Bill. But we would also like to advance it to the floor as a standalone bill.
So, Representative Downey, you'd like to speak to the bill with the DE3 amendment, is that correct?
Madam Chair, yes, obviously. I can't move it yet, I don't think. But
not quite. But if you'd like to explain to members what it entails.
Sure. Just a quick background. Across all of the executive branch agencies, there are numerous CIOs and departmental IT organizations, and we have been working for years within the Office of Enterprise Technology in the executive branch and here in the legislature to start moving and consolidating those IT functions that make sense into a centralized IT organization that would then serve the agencies. A couple of notable features here as compared to simply consolidating these IT functions, we're going to do that, move all of the people, the physical assets, the processes, and all the systems and budgets, and then hold that Office of Enterprise Technology Organization accountable to the other executive branch agencies through service level agreements. So that's an important feature of it.
Are there any questions for Representative Downey? Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, there was, with the original bill, a fiscal note that had quite a large sum of money attached to it. Now with the amendment, what is the cost? Because I don't think I had a fiscal note here with the amendment.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Carlson, yes, there was actually a $38 million fiscal note. We met with the Office of the CIO. Representative Kahn and I met with the Office of the CIO Commissioner Showalter a couple of different meetings. Understood the assumptions, and their assumptions included a lot of physical moves of office space, a lot of consolidation of facilities, a lot of new systems to bring things together. So there were a lot of expenditures. Many of the people costs associated with what they were talking about are already encompassed in other parts of the bill. So we actually have appropriated $1 million from the Technology Revolving Fund, which is the chargeback account for the Office of Enterprise Technology, to cover what are legitimate upfront costs to develop these service level agreements and do some of the fiscal work behind the scenes to move all these budgets and accounts over to the Office of Enterprise Technology. Staff did just drop off a fiscal note literally at 8:04. I did not get a chance to look at it. They may have a sense that there's more than $1 million from the Technology Revolving Fund that they would need to pull this off, but at this point in time, the bill as it stands has the $1 million in the Technology Revolving Fund.
So, Madam Chair, there is a fiscal note that just arrived. Is that what you said, Representative Downey?
Representative Downey.
Staff is sitting here in the room with one. I haven't had a chance to review it, obviously, given the fact that it was delivered after the meeting started.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I understand you haven't had a chance to review it, but it would be nice for the committee to see that fiscal note. And I only raise the question in the sense that the original cost of the bill, I think if I recall, was like $13 million the first year and 25 the second, or maybe I've got that flipped around, but you said $38 million, which sounds pretty close to what I remember. I've talked with Representative Kahn, and she's in support of the bill and indicated that the cost was going to be a whole lot less than what that original bill was. And I guess the question is then, does the million in the bill cover the cost? And it would be nice to see the fiscal note or maybe if you have a copy, Madam Chair, if you could just tell us what they're saying in the fiscal note, or
well,
somebody.
Representative Carlson, we took it off of Representative Downey's file at his chair. We can get the pages to make copies of it. We still don't have a quorum, so I haven't moved the bill or so.
Yeah,
we can move the next bill and.
It would be fine to get a copy, or if somebody could just tell us that if $1 million covers it, that's what my question is, that the revolving fund doesn't have an impact on the general fund.
Right.
So, but before we report the bill out, the question would be, does $1 million cover it?
Representative Downey, I think what we'll do is we'll get copies of the fiscal note made, and we'll hopefully get back to your bill later this morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Drazkowski. Welcome to the committee again. We don't have a quorum yet, but if you'd like to explain your bill, and we do have a fiscal note for your bill in the packet as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, House File 637 basically reduces some of the inspection and licensing of food service events and activities involving faith-based organizations, sportsmen's organizations, schools, that type of thing. And the policy part actually is a compromise with the Department of Health. We're all good on the policy part. And Ms. Polis from the Department of Health is here if anybody has any questions of her. And as you can see, the fiscal note comes out at, as I understand it, at zero.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Representative Drazkowski?
Madam Chair.
Representative Abler.
Well, thanks, and I just wanted to pile on support for the bill. The this came out as extremely controversial, and there was a line of people that were interested in discussing with Representative Drazkowski that was pretty long, and now they're all like watching and cheering. So he did a good job.
Thank you, Representative Abler. Any additional questions for Representative Drazkowski?
This is Parks.
We're waiting for one more member in order to act, but I think what we'll do is we'll go on to the next bill, and as soon as we get a quorum, we'll revert back and
thank you, Madam.
Thank you. Representative Crawford. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
And again, once we have a quorum, I'll officially move your bill. And looks like you have an amendment. If you could explain your bill and then the amendment, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 705 is a mandate relief bill. All the items in here have been requested by local units of government, cities and counties. The amendment, quoted A4, removes Section 1. Section 1 was a provision that would have allowed counties to choose to use a private CPA firm for audits, and that has been removed.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions for Representative Crawford? All right, and it's my understanding that there wouldn't be any cost to Section 2 of the bill, that the auditor's office says that they won't put any costs by allowing Rochester to continue to be audited by the CPA for 5 years. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that is correct.
All righty. And again, we're waiting for one more member till we can officially take action. So if there aren't any additional questions for Representative Crawford, we'll set that aside and move on to Representative Wardlow. Is he in the room?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Representative Wardlow.
Morning, Madam Chair, members. House File 211 has gone through a number of different versions. Right now it's the Omnibus Torts Bill. It includes a number of tort reform and tort measures, two of which have a fiscal impact. Section 6 of the bill increases the jurisdictional threshold for conciliation court from $7,500 to $10,000, and for credit card transactions from $4,000 to $5,000, and that brings in money. $158,000, third page of the fiscal note, in the middle there, you can see that. And Section 7 of the bill, which is the original House File 211, allows for interlocutory appeals of class action certification orders as a matter of right. That will increase costs to the state, according to the fiscal note, by $117,000 for a net savings across the bill of $41,000 each year, $82,000 for the biennium.
All right, thank you, Representative Wardlow. We do have a quorum. Officially call the meeting to order. Mr. Smith will note the roll. I will move House File 211 for consideration by the committee, and Bill Marks will explain the fiscal note that's included in your packet. Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair, members, what you have in your packet is a kind of a typed several pages, and the first page says fiscal note House File 211. We put this together on Saturday because the fiscal note is that follows that is complete for the Supreme Court, and they're the ones that had cost issues or actually savings, and that's shown on the attached pages there. The fiscal note had also gone to the Attorney General, but as of Saturday, the Attorney General had not completed the fiscal note for the second engrossment. So what's attached in your folder is the fiscal note that the Attorney General had completed for the first engrossment, which had indicated no costs. Since then, just this morning, we received the fiscal note from the Attorney General on the second engrossment, and it you don't have copies of that. I have a copy here that I just printed, but it also indicates the Attorney General has no cost in House File 211 in the second engrossment. So the information that you have is still accurate. This fiscal note that came this morning is still preliminary. The Attorney General has signed off. The Supreme Court had previously signed off, but MMB has not yet signed off on it. So that's the status now.
All right, any questions?
Yeah.
Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, I wonder if the author could explain some of the bill. It's my understanding that this one has a fair amount of controversy. I know we just heard about the fiscal note, but what exactly is happening with tort liability here?
Representative Wardlow.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Carlson. It's not terribly controversial. Sections 1, 4, and 5 of the bill are the former, or House File 32 that have been folded in here. That's Representative Dill's bill. Poses a $1 million tort liability limit for nonprofits administering outdoor recreational activities on municipal land facilities and parks and recreation. 1343 is Detmer's bill, Representative Detmer's bill, for civil immunity for schools that make facilities available for recreational use by the public outside of school time. We've got House File 868, Representative Szymanski's bill. It raises the monetary thresholds for conciliation court. House File 211, the certification, interlocutory appeal as a matter of right for class certification decisions. We also have a change to the statute of limitations for certain cases from 6 to 4 years with the discovery rule. And we have changes to the prejudgment interest rate under Section 9 of the bill. That's House File 770, like 654, the statute of limitations change. That's Representative Mazarall's bill. We have a requirement that attorney fee awards be related to the reasonableness of the attorney fees sought in a case where attorney fees are sought be related to the amount of damages awarded. And then finally, we have House File 1217 in here, which is Representative Smith's bill and creates a cause of action for a sex trafficking victim against the person who violates certain sex trafficking criminal statutes.
And I think, Madam Chair, the controversial part of the bill, I think, is the House File 654, the Wardlow part of it, where you're...
That would be Madam Chair.
Pardon?
Representative Carlson. Wardlow.
That would be Representative Mazarall's House File 654.
Yeah, whatever. At any rate, that section of the bill is the one that reduces the statute of limitations from 6 years to 4 years. Was that not somewhat controversial?
I apologize.
Representative Wardlaw.
Somewhat controversial. There were questions in committees.
Oh, Madam Chair,
Representative Carlson.
When you say questions in committee, you're being a little bit vague there, Representative Wardlaw. Could you maybe share with us what some of those questions may have been then?
Well, Representative Carlson, it's subjective, I think, a little bit in whether it was controversial. As far as, I mean, what kind of testimony you want to know occurred on that particular bill?
Well,
or, I mean, I'm
I
sure
heard
that,
Madam Chair, when you change the statute of limitations from 6 years to 4 years, that's, in the view of some, controversial. And I was asking the author of the bill what the controversy may have been, and he said there were some questions. I wasn't sure what he meant by that, but
Representative Wardlaw.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, yes, 64, I apologize. I did author that portion of the bill, and there were questions from members in civil law and in Judiciary Committee on that portion of this bill when it was going through as a standalone bill. We made a number of changes to accommodate concerns from various stakeholders. There were concerns with regard to the statute of limitations just being shortened, and we had to have a lot of discussion about what statute of limitations are for, the purpose of the statute of limitations, talking about how the statute of limitations in Minnesota at 6 years is outside the norm for certain types of cause of action and needs to be shortened, how the statute of limitations goes back to the territorial statutes of Minnesota, 1858, when, you know, horses and had to carry messages from place to place. Or we had telegraphs, perhaps, just starting to have a telegraph system. But other than that, I mean, law was very different back then, and you needed to have a longer period of time in which to bring a claim. But the same policy considerations don't hold now, and shorter statute of limitations is good for Minnesota's business climate. So we had discussions along those lines, Representative.
And Chair. Representative Carlson, I think, if my memory serves me correctly, if you look on page 6 of the bill, the paragraph starting on line 11, I think, was part of the compromise language that I don't think was in the bill as introduced, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. Representative Wardlaw?
Page 6. Yes, Madam Chair, that's correct.
Any additional questions? Representative Abler.
Well, Madam Chair, I haven't heard this bill in any of my committees. I'm not sure what... I think it's extremely controversial to me. I mean, this is a money committee, and so I'm not sure how I'm going to vote on the thing, but it's not nothing. And I was just reading it. I have a lot of policy questions, which are, we're busy at the end of session, and so I'm just expressing concerns. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Wardlaw. I just want to thank you for bringing this legislation forward. I think it's important, especially when we're talking about the school property and facilities and making sure that our school districts are not held liable for some serious consequences for something that is out of their control. So I think this is good. It will save our school districts from a lot of legal heartache and wrangling, and appreciate you for bringing this forward.
Thank you.
Right, any additional questions on House Bill 211? Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, just as a brief follow-up to Representative Abler's point, we are close to the end of the session, and the bill, at least I heard as recently as last week when it was posted or over the weekend, was controversial. And I have to express concern then about moving the bill forward if it is controversial without more information about it. So, at least as one member of the committee, I think I'll be voting no for that reason alone. I think more information is warranted. Thank you.
Thank you. I will renew my motion that House File 211 be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Wardlow. Let's go back to Representative Roskowski. I will move House File 637 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Members that came in late, we already heard testimony on this bill. If there's any additional questions, we can take them at this time. There is no cost to the bill. Any questions? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 637 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. Representative Crawford. I will move House File 705 to be considered by the committee. In addition, there is an A4 amendment which will take the fiscal cost of the bill out. So I will then move the A4 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like his bill. All those in favor of the A4 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A4 amendment is adopted. We now have the bill in the shape in which you'd like it to be discussed, which would reflect a zero fiscal note. Are there any questions on the Crawford bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of House File 705 as amended say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. House File 705 is on its way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Crawford. I think what we'll do next is House File 1261. Representative from that council has a 9 o'clock meeting he has to get to. And Representative Carlson, if you take the gavel.
Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'd like to move House File 1261 be recommended to pass and move to the General Register. This is a typical bill that would allow for bonding for capital for the Met Council. We see this virtually every year. Sometimes it's a public finance bill. This year we are going to move this as a separate bill as well. It has gone through the tax committee, and it allows for $35 million in bonding authority for the Met Council. You can see there's a revenue note included in the packet, and the Met Council has testified that they can accomplish this under current levy rates.
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, this was one that I did have a question of in tax committee, and the Met Council did provide the information, so I think the bill was in good form. Is there any discussion on the bill? Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, what will pay these bonds off? Is it property taxes? Is that
Mr. Chair and Representative Westrom, yes, this levy authority is backed up by property tax for those properties located within the transit taxing district, which is a subset of the 7-county metro area.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Maybe the Met Council could comment. The question that I had was, or other obligations, and I did receive an email with that information. Maybe you could just explain, being that we did spend a little time in taxes, on what the other obligations are and why we should not be too concerned about that.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetton, and I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. I appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning. Representative Carlson, you did ask that question in the tax committee, and according to our finance folks at the council prefers to maintain both the ability to do to to use our debt service or also to issue bonds and also have certificates of indebtedness, because apparently those they operate differently. I'm not our finance director, and I'm cut a little short on that, but apparently the way that those bonds or the certificates of indebtedness are issued are based on market rates at the time, and sometimes you can get a better rate with the certificate of indebtedness. Lately that has not been the case, and we have not issued those certificates as of late, but with the capital that the council bonds for in these with this authority is short-term capital projects that are have the livelihood of somewhere between like 10 and 12 years, and the certificate of indebtedness in the past has been a better source for us to issue those bonds, but lately it's just been regular transit bonds.
Yeah. And that's what I meant by the information that had been provided. So any further discussion? If not, then all those in favor.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Abler.
Yeah, I was asking before. Thanks. Well, I'm just a little frustrated with the Met Council these days. I try to support them. My predecessor founded them, and I've been is on the supporter team in general, but I really didn't like their transportation plan, and we worked with it to make it softer, and I'm just, this is mostly a statement, but I'm just, you know, Representative Holberg, I presume that you're convinced that this money will be used in a lean and frugal manner, and since it's backed by a property tax on people who are being taxed out of their homes in some cases. And so I hope that in our administration we're keeping them accountable. I am concerned about some of the policy directions coming from there, trying to strangulate the Viking Stadium with some decisions and so on, and I think that the discussion is far beyond this, but I think we need regional planning, but I think we need to have more, I don't want an elected Met Council, but maybe we need to have more elected officials on there, but this is $35 million, and I just sat through, where'd Abler go? I just sat through a process reducing human services spending by $1.6 billion, where we're frugally guarding our disability services and making every dollar go further. So I hope the Met Council will take that message back and say that we want to be sure that it's all going to, you know, projects that we know are totally sound and consistent with, you know, helping us succeed. So I guess I don't need a response, but I just wanted to tell you that. Thanks.
Okay, that was a comment then. Representative Ornstein.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, just to assuage any concern that the committee has, whether you agree or disagree with any particular Met Council policy program plan at this point, this is, as Representative Holbrook said, a very routine, bipartisan, enabling legislation to, you know, keep the buses on the road and upgrade the rolling stock. So it's really not controversial, again, what say what you will, agree or disagree with a particular Met Council policy, this isn't really, appropriate for this bill. And I'd urge a yes.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor of House File 1261 being passed and placed on the general register signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
Is Representative Johnson in the room? Welcome to the committee, Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Yeah. Looks like we have a Senate file.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
For your bill. Let me. All right. Representative Hornstein moves Senate file 346. And then what we need to do is insert the House language of House File 554. Representative Hornstein, will you move House File 554 onto Senate File 346?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. And Representative Johnson, I think we then have the bill in the way that you'd like it. And if you'd explain the bill to the committee, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to be in front of your committee. What this bill does simply is extends the expiration date of the Mississippi River Parkway Commission, which is currently set for 2012 to 2016. And just briefly, for those not familiar with the Parkway Commission, it's been around since 1963. It's a bipartisan commission that's aimed at two things, really. One is to promote tourism and keep people visiting the communities along the Mississippi River from Lake Itasca all the way through the state of Minnesota. And secondly, to help Great River Road, which is the transportation line that follows the Mississippi River, to ensure that it's a good traveling experience for folks, again, that they continue tourism, that the bike paths stay intact, and that that the whole process is overseen. So this is a nonpartisan commission. Again, there's two House members on the commission. It's myself and Brandon Peterson. Previously had been Representative David. On the Senate side is Senator Senjum and Senator Pappas that are on the commission. And there's several other folks from that are citizens that represent different regions along the river that serve on the commission. With respect to the Ways and Means issue, perhaps the main thing to probably know is that the budget is found in state government finance. It's currently in conference committee, and I appreciate your support for the bill.
All right. Thank you. Representative Lestrom.
Madam Chair, to the author, about how much a year are we spending on this commission?
Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Westrom, approximately
$62,000. Representative Westrom.
Madam Chair, I guess I'm just wondering why we have these sunset dates and then we just keep extending them. Have they not accomplished what they were set out to do since 1963, Representative Johnson?
Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Westrom, actually they have. They've been quite successful. They brought into the state along Great River Road and for the different communities along this area roughly $4 million over the last 8 years. And I was just notified this last week that we received from the National Scenic Byway Fund around $170,000 for this coming year. So we've been quite successful. And that's one of the great things about this particular organization. We're the byway organization for this National Scenic Byway, which is one of the premier ones in the country. And we help secure those funds to make it more of a tourist destination along the river.
Madam Chair.
Representative
Johnson, would those funds not be available if we didn't have the commission? Would there be nobody else that could receive them? And are those national federal tax dollars or those private foundation dollars? What's behind those?
Typically it's a 20. Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a 20-80 match. We work with the Department of Transportation on this. A person from the Department of Transportation sits on the commission, and we work in conjunction with the Department of Transportation to secure those funds.
Representative House.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to vote no simply because there are things in northern Minnesota that are not being taken care of this session 2 years ago and 4 years ago, and that is dealing with the Mississippi Headwaters Board. It's a board that Senator Bob Lessard was very active in instigating about 20 or 30 years ago. And my local counties are still funding this out of their own pocket and no longer getting help from the state. If they do get help, they have to beg and they get very little. This $63,000, if it were to go to the Mississippi Headwaters Board, it would help them survive. If the Mississippi Headwaters Board leaves, the federal government will take over anything that happens on the Mississippi River from Itasca Park all the way down to the Twin Cities, i.e., if I want to build a deck on the back of my house, I have to get a permit from the federal government. So far, our local counties have prevented that from happening. but this $63,000 would keep them active and keep the federal government out of my backyard and many other people's backyards. And if the Mississippi Headwaters goes away, the federal government takes over, this commission would be worthless because you wouldn't be able to do anything without permission of the federal government. So that's why I'm voting no.
Thank you, Representative Howes. Representative Johnson.
I appreciate Representative Howes' comments. I will note that we have a member from the Headwaters Board that serves on the commission as well and does a nice job, Mr. Jack Frost. You might be familiar with him. If that's good or bad, I don't know, I guess.
Representative Howes?
Madam Chair, he probably gets more per diem from your commission than the other one.
All right, any additional questions? Oh, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Johnson, what is the overall operating budget for the Mississippi Parkway Commission?
It's
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's 62, in the current state government finance bill, $62,700 per year.
But
proposed.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, if I'm reading the fiscal note correctly, it says that you also get federal and local grants for that, for this organization. So I am assuming that their operating budget is larger than the allocation that we have here in this fiscal note, or?
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, we have a contract that we operate, administrative contract for technical services to the tune of about $24,500. That's part of the 62.7 that you're referencing.
Okay. And so, Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Okay, so Representative Johnson, you're saying, so you don't have any other funds besides the 62.7, that's the only funds that you're operating off of?
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We do receive, as I said, we apply for funds on the national level and receive those funds for such things as the Visual Resource Protection Plan, and we help implement those. And that was our most recent grant from the federal government was for that source, from that source.
Representative Anderson.
That's it.
Thank you. Any additional questions for Representative Johnson? Seeing none, Representative Hornstein renews his motion that Senate File 346 as amended be recommended pass and referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion's adopted. Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Gottwald. Representative Gottwald, we have House File 1423 in front of the committee, and we don't have an updated fiscal note on that, and I'm wondering.
Madam Chair, I understand it's being posted this morning, and it shows no fiscal impact to the state.
All right. Would you explain briefly to the committee what your bill does and why you thought it might have a fiscal note?
Madam Chair, does somebody want to move the bill?
I'll move House Bill 1423 for consideration by the committee.
Okay, members, quick overview. Article 1 of this bill updates the adoption assistance procedure.
And Representative Gottwald, it's a quite lengthy
bill here. No need to do
that,
huh?
Yeah, we don't need to hear the whole bill. We're just curious why it was sent here. And with the zero, were you waiting or wondering if there was going to be a cost? Or
Madam Chair, there was some concern that it may have some cost to it. My understanding, again, as I mentioned, is that the fiscal note indicates no fiscal impact to the state.
And what portion of the bill was there a concern with there being a fiscal cost?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure.
Okay. All right. Well, let's see. If you want to just give us a brief overview of the bill and what it does.
Very briefly, Madam Chair, Article 1, as I mentioned, updates the adoption assistance procedures and ensures that the program is targeted to meet the needs of special needs children who are under the guardianship of the commissioner. Again, this is the Department of Human Services Child Welfare Policy Bill. The second article, the final article of the bill, makes technical changes related to recognition of parentage forms and to a court's continuing exclusive jurisdiction over child support cases. And with that, I'll take any questions, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Members, are there any questions on House File 1423? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 1423 be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Representative Hamilton. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Madam Chair, I will have one oral amendment.
All right. What's your Representative Hamilton moves House File 1611 for consideration by the committee, and your oral amendment.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. We sent this to the House floor, and afterwards visited the fiscal note caught up with us. And on page 21 of the bill, section 36, there's $1 million impact because of that language there. I'd like to strike that. So it would be lines 21.19 through 21.23. And again, I'd like to strike that language, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Gottwald moves to...
Hamilton.
I'm sorry. Representative Hamilton, my apologies, to strike section 36 of the bill. Are there any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, yes. There is, and I'd like the committee to weigh in on this, or at least understand this provision as well. In the fiscal note, I believe the dollar amount was a total of $3,000 that would potentially raise for the state. And that would be on page 3 and page 4 of the bill. And basically what that does is the department will issue certificates for export. And in the event we send exports to some of these smaller countries that we don't know as much about, and they may have additional requirements, it will actually cost the department a little more to issue those certificates if they have to do some additional research. So the language the department asked for is they have the certificate cost, whether it's $75 or a minimum fee necessary to cover department costs, including research and processing. And again, that's about $1,000 increase to the state generated. The other provision in here that's about $2,000 increase to the state is we have a few individuals, bad actors I'll call them, that will not require the necessary certificates needed to run nursery stock growers, et cetera, et cetera. And so what the department asked for is if that happens, that they could charge them back what that fee would have been. And that raises about $2,000, additional $2,000 for the state. So that'd be the $3,000 that it would have a fiscal impact that I would ask for your support and be able to move this back to the floor.
All right. Representative Hamilton, what are you shipping to potentially small countries?
It could be seeds, Madam Chair. It could be as simple as seeds, other agriculture type of, you know, products. So, but the example that was brought up would be like small packages of seeds, whether it's plants, flowers, whatever the case may be.
All right. Thank you. Representative Weston.
Madam Chair, to the shrubbery issue, what are you exactly talking about the department fining or charging back to who about shrubbery? I didn't follow that exactly.
Representative
Madam Chair,
Hamilton.
And Representative Westrum. We worked with, the department worked with nursery and landscapers, and there are individuals that if they do not have that their certificate to operate here. There has been, historically, there has been, they say, well, let's take us to court, and if you want to get reimbursed, if you will, for that certificate that I needed to operate, But the core cost, and many times, is prohibitive for the department to actually push this through to, rightfully so, get the fees or the, again, the cost of the certificates needed to operate. So it just, it's, they don't pursue it. And so what they're asking for is that if somebody was in violation of this, that they could indeed go back, figure out how length of time that they did operate and charge them those certificate fees.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, is that like a license to be able to plant shrubs in this state? You have to have a certificate in order to move dirt or plant shrubs as a landscaper? Is that what they're talking about?
Representative Hamilton.
Well, basically what it is, the commissioner, they assess the fees for the inspection services and work performed and carrying out the issuance. Oh, I'm on the wrong page here. Sorry. You want to talk to this?
Nope.
All right. Here we go. I have the individual that can answer your question.
All right. Welcome to the committee, sir. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members, my name is Geir Friso. I'm the director of the Plant Protection Division in the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And with regarding the question, if I understood it properly, there is a requirement that all nursery growers and dealers have a certificate, and that puts them on our rolls, and we do conduct inspections. Typically, every year we find dozen to 20 nurseries that are operating without a certificate. Generally, these are startup operations, and they may not even be aware of the requirement. So we simply ask them to get certified, and that's usually not a problem. The problem has arisen where you have somebody who deliberately goes off the roll for several years and basically is waiting for us to catch them, and so we'd like to recover those lost revenue.
Madam Chair,
Representative Westrom.
Just to clarify then, how are you recapturing those lost revenues? What kind of money are we talking about? Because if it's only $2,000 and it's a few a year, I mean, it doesn't sound like it's that much lost revenue. Is it penalties for not being certified? Is it the certification based on the number of dollars that they, volume they sell? Is it a flat fee of $100 a year? What, just give me a little more insight on that.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Friso.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, it's simply a reinstatement of the certificate fee. The lowest fee, which is the smallest category, is about $150 per year, so typically it is rather small. It depends on the size of the nursery that's involved.
And so, Madam Chair, the fee, is there a lot of charges added on that, or is it just basically to get them back in compliance and you charge them back for 5 years if they've been without a certificate for that period of time?
Mr. Friso.
Madam Chair, members, it's basically to get them back into compliance. And we would certainly, if it was found that they'd been operating several years without a certificate, we would certainly be monitoring that situation in the future.
Representative Westrom?
No.
Any additional questions for Representative Hamilton? Representative Wagenius, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hamilton, I'm looking on the top of page 15. With subdivision 11, the aquatic application of pesticides. That issue was addressed in Representative McNamara's bill. You are not deleting this language here?
Representative Hamilton.
Madam Chair and Representative Wagenius, no, not here in this committee. And I understand what the debate has been, and we are working with the department as well on this and having these conversations as we go. Basically, what it boils down to is definitions of waters of the state versus waters of the United States. And again, this is a policy provision. We came in here to... Well, like I said, we're having these conversations. We do have Ms. Gauthier from the department as well. If she'd like to come up and answer that question.
Good morning.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you. My question is more that I thought this issue had been resolved and people had made an agreement, and it looks like the agreement is being opened up, and that's my question. I don't think it's...
Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Representative Wagenius, Greta Gauthier, Department of Agriculture. You're referring to subdivision 11 at the top of page 15. Yes, we have been working with the Pollution Control Agency, Madam Chair, and stakeholders very recently to try to find some language that would address this situation. For members who are not aware of it, there was a court order recently that is requiring the Pollution Control Agency to issue four new types of permits. We are working with them to make sure that those permits in their issuance do what the court order intends and what the EPA has instructed, and retains the Department of Agriculture's purview in terms of regulating pesticides for farm use, ag use. This language here is not the language that we are looking at all anymore. It has evolved since then. I would be happy to sit down with you, Representative Wagenius, or any other members, and go over that in detail. But we're not quite at the point yet where we're ready to, where our author's ready to add it to this bill. We have a little bit of work left to do, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. I understand there has been a controversy. My reason I bring it up is because we passed language in already on the floor. We've already voted on it. And I see language backtracking now appearing in this bill. So it seemed to me that we had an agreement, something passed the House, and now there's the backtrack. That's my question. It's not the content, it's the process. And that would be for Representative Hamilton.
Representative yeah. Hamilton.
And Madam Chair and Representative Wagenius, I understand that. As far as what we're doing is that court order and court ruling has been very, very recent. We're still, I'm in the process of reviewing that and understanding it as well. And I didn't want to change that here today, along with some others, while it gives us the chance to go back and visit with the department, also review that, and make sure that we address this prior to this being heard on the House floor as well.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair, but it's already been heard on the House floor. It's already been passed and voted on.
So, and Madam Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
Chairwoman and Representative Wagenius, I understand that. Again, we're going to continue having these conversations, and there's a chance that, well, like I said, I feel more comfortable here today to have these conversations, continue reviewing what that court order was, and then have the discussion with the department before, once again, this hits the House floor.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hamilton, since I don't serve on these committees, was the court order, the order that you're trying to take into consideration, did that come out before the House floor vote or after?
Representative
Hamilton.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greiling, the court order, it came down, I believe, before the bill was the other bill to which you refer. I believe it's the environment policy, environment, energy, natural resources policy bill. Before that bill was heard on the floor, the court order came down. I'm not exactly sure of the date, Madam Chair. I believe it was towards the beginning of session or before session began, this legislative session.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So then, Representative Hamilton, you agreed to that on the floor, but now you're wanting to rework it. And so are you intending to rework it so that it just fits better, or are you intending to backtrack?
So, Madam Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
Madam Chair, the final language has not come out of the conference committee as well, as far as the agreed upon language. In the environment bill, so monitoring that very, very closely as well. This is not in any way, shape, or form to backtrack to work
to go against the work that is being done as far as the concerns on all sides. I had concerns. I believe that Representative Paul Anderson, along with other members, are working diligently on this as well. I'm very interested on what is going to come out, if that language, the agreed-upon language, indeed comes out in that bill. And so, again, I'm monitoring this. Other people are taking a look at this, and we'll continue having these discussions with the department.
Representative Greiling.
Madam Chair, thank you. Well, I'll just say, you know, obviously a bill that comes out second and signed second is, you know, trumps anything else. So I guess I am very concerned that you wouldn't at least put in this bill, even while it's being worked on, the language that we had passed as the House position. And then, of course, that can always be reworked as you're monitoring the conference committee. And so I would urge you to consider doing that.
Thank you.
Representative Hamilton.
So, and Madam Chair, and I appreciate your positions on this as well. And I came in here before this committee to address the fiscal implications of this bill. And I just want everybody to know that we are having these conversations. We've worked very closely with the department on this, and they've been great to work with. I came in here again to prepared to discuss and on the fiscal implications of this bill, and I understand your concerns. Point well taken, and I'll take those into consideration as well.
Thank you. Any additional questions, Representative Carlson?
Madam Chair, I understand that you're changing the definition of what constitutes a feedlot in the bill.
No.
Is that not true, and that the PCA has some concerns about when you're pasteurization around the feedlots, that section of the bill?
So, Madam Chair, that's a policy provision as well. And basically what we heard on that, testimony from cattle growers and others, when it comes to winter grazing of cattle, the issue that arises is right now it states if you have vegetative cover, once it snows, the PCA would say you no longer have vegetative cover. And these small cattle guys that have cattle on these lots, whether it be a pasture ground or they would turn them out to cornfields, the PCA has the testimony that we've heard, and with the cattlemen's day on the hill, they said now all of a sudden if it snows, the PCA is weighing in saying that these corn stalks or whatever no longer has vegetative cover, and therefore you're out of compliance. What this bill does, outlines or defines what a pasture is, whether it's on grass or corn stubble or whatever the case may be. It outlines specifically what a pasture is.
Are there any additional questions, Representative Hamilton? Seeing none, Representative Hamilton renews his motion that House File 1261, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you.
Representative Breinhart moves the minutes from the May 13th meeting. Are there any additional additions or corrections? Questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the minutes from May 13th say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The minutes are approved as distributed. Representative Downey, are you ready to go at this point with your bill?
Very close, Madam Chair. If I can talk slowly, we can get the printed amendment distributed to the members.
All right. If you'd like to go to the stand. It's like Representative Kahn's going to join you. This is too good to be true. All right. Representative Davids thinks we should call House Photo quick.
Get House Photography.
All right. Members, I don't think we had officially moved Representative Downey's bill for lack of a quorum when we first started out this morning, so if you'd like to move your bill, please.
I think, Madam Chair, I'd move House File 191 be passed and referred to the General Register.
All Okay, thank you. And then you have the DE3 amendments.
Yes, Madam Chair, if I could move the DE3 amendment. And members, this is to make sure that the bill conforms to the language that is currently in the state government finance omnibus bill.
All right, all those in favor of the DE amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. DE amendment is adopted. And then as we left off with this bill, we had a fiscal note delivered a few minutes after committee started. That was distributed to the committee members, I believe, and you and Representative Kahn have been working to try and address that issue.
Madam Chairman, we do have an amendment to address that issue, but it's being copied now.
All right.
And we'll I can explain the two parts of it.
Certainly.
The first part gives the CIO a little bit of flexibility, a year's flexibility in terms of when they do the transfers, if it negatively affects the enterprise revolving fund. And the second one says that all the fiscal costs will come from the enterprise revolving, I hope that's the right name of it, the enterprise revolving fund. And what happens is that the OET is one of these kind of self-supporting departments where they pay back to the, they charge member, they charge the agencies for doing their information systems, and then the agency, so that's where their major budget comes from, is chargebacks to the agency. So what this is just a, so this is just another charge to the agency, any charges that come out of that, and so they'll adjust their rates if there is a cost, which we are somewhat doubtful of. These chargebacks will then go to the agencies, and that will then take care of it according to the proper fund balances and the proper different kinds of funds that are done. But the so for those of you who have the amount, I guess almost everyone has it. The two parts I would like to, we were given very good work by House Research over the weekend. And the options that we would like to move two of the options that we were given, and that was on the sheet that you have, I'd like to move one and three.
Thank you. All right, members, I am just for the fun of it going to title this the Downey-Kahn Amendment, for lack of a number in the upper right-hand corner, and that Kahn would like to move items one and three of the Downey-Kahn Amendment. Are there any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. You now have House File 191 as amended twice with the DE3 and the Downey-Kahn Amendment in front of the committee. Are there any additional questions or comments? All right. Seeing none, Representative Downey renews his motion that House File 191 as amended be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Representative Kahn and Downey.
This bill has had such good reception for this part of it every time we've been that I've said the only one point I've turned to my co-author and said, I think the only people who are voting against this are the people who either can't stand you or can't stand me. So I don't think there's any policy
issue. You should have a unanimous vote then, Representative Conigani. All right, Representative Beard, I believe you are up next. And my understanding is you want to take up House File 1025 first, is that correct? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 1025 is known as the Energy Policy Bill. When I put this together, Madam Chair, I put it together diligently so that there would be no general fund impact. And so I'm a little baffled as to why it came here, with the possible exception that we did include a provision by Representative McNamara, which was an agency bill that actually lifts a sunset for what was known in the olden days as the Energy Reliability Administrator. The Commerce Department had the ability to assess utilities $1 million a year, and that authority expires June 30th of 2012. The administration would like to lift that sunset, and so there's a $1 million impact there. although that is usually levied or assessed against utilities and spent on their various activities. Indeed, Madam Chair, if you look at the fiscal note, every item in here that will cost something in the resulting in staff time or studies or something like that, rulemaking, is assessed or levied. So it's basically in and out accounts, and there is no general fund impact. Along the way, however, while it's here, if I may, there is a technical fix we do need to do. That would be the A-12 amendment that's just been passed out to you. But you know what? While members look at that, Madam Chair, let's go to the ones that are in the packet. Let's start with the A-8 amendment. It is a technical amendment that I'd rather do here. I'd rather do it in this committee than on the floor, Madam Chair, because probably it's if I need, I have expert witnesses that can say why the A-8 makes sense from a technical perspective to further clarify some of the language on the multi-year rate plan, which is one of the provisions in the bill in which there's general peace in the valley. And then on the second part of it from Lake City, line 1.5 on, deals with the conservation improvement program, which I think you'll find most of the users and ratepayers have peace in the valley, but maybe not the administration so much, just in the interest of full disclosure. But the utilities have come to us and said they also consume large amounts of power, and as they're improving their facilities and reducing their energy load, they'd like to be able to count that towards their conservation improvement program, too. That's the A-8 amendment. And, Madam Chair, I suppose the first thing I should do is move House File 1025 and recommend it to pass, be placed in the general register. Having said that, I'd like to move the A-8 amendment to House File 1025.
All right, members, are there any questions on the A-8 amendment? Seeing none, Representative Beard renews the A-8 amendment for approval. Mm-hmm. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A-8 amendment is adopted. Representative Beard, your pleasure, what you'd like to take up next.
Madam Chair, I also have an A-12 amendment. Mr. Marks pointed out to me this morning that in one of the provisions in the bill, there was the ability for the department to assess for the costs of doing business, but we neglected to include an appropriation line to allow them to expend what they assessed. And so this is a technical amendment which will put the House in order financially for, I believe, the Department of Commerce, and so I'd move adoption of the A-12 amendment.
Representative Beard, it's actually for the PUC
Excuse
to expend
PUC.
That. Members, are there any questions on the A-12 amendments? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A-12 amendment is adopted.
And Madam Chair,
I have the A-9 and 10.
Madam Chair, we're not taking the A-9 amendment up.
All right.
The A-10 amendment is Representative Howes, Madam Chair, and I think that would be a good one to go on here as well.
Representative Howes, would you like to offer the A-10 amendment this morning?
Would.
Right, and if you'd explain to the committee what it does.
All co-ops except for one co-op needs 5% of the board to call for an election, except for one co-op, which only needs 1%, and it's too easy to call for elections and continue on forever calling for elections. We would like to change that so everybody is on an even playing field.
All right. Are there any questions on the A-10 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A-10 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A-10 amendment is adopted. Representative Beard, I don't see any other amendments for the House File 1025. But I'm getting a phone a friend here on the A-12 amendment. Mr. Marks is recommending a modification to that, which we already adopted.
Madam Chair, Representative Beard, members, on the A-12 amendment, the appropriation one, it doesn't say what from what fund. I would suggest on line 1.6, after appropriated, saying from the general fund. The assessment that the PUC can do here, the revenue from that assessment goes in the general fund. So I think it would help clarify to say what fund the money would come from.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, I'm fine with that modification. I won't mention who the author was of this amendment, who could have made that when we first printed it. But if you'd like, would we have to reconsider the A-12 amendment, modify it, and then readopt it, or how would you like the process to work?
We've already adopted the A-12 amendment, so we just have to amend that. And so, members, the Amendment would be on line 1.6 of the A12 amendment after the word appropriated, insert from the general fund. Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the oral amendment to the A12 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Oral amendments adopted. Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, thank you. Members, this is a policy bill. We had some good discussion in Energy Committee. I'm looking forward to discussion on the floor. And there are a couple other things. Many of you have talked to me about a couple provisions that we'll probably amend either out or change on the floor. And I'm looking forward to engaging the discussion. Madam Chair, I'd like to renew the motion 1025 as amended, be recommended pass placed on the general register.
All right. Representative Westrom.
Madam Chair, Representative Beard, is this the bill that contained or does it still contain the repeal of the 40 kilowatt net metering provision?
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, Representative Westrom, yes, it does. There'll be some discussion about that on the floor. We talked about altering or deleting that in this committee and decided since it was pure policy that we would let the maker of the original motion take care of that business on the floor of the House.
Madam
Senator
Chair, Representative Beard, is that his intention at this point in time? Do you know? I've heard that might be, but I wanted to clarify.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, Representative Westrom, yes, that's his intention, but I cannot speak for him.
Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, I understand that there are some provisions in this bill that are somewhat controversial. I was wondering if Representative Beard could explain the language that moves us back on our energy conservation improvement program.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, members, yes, there has been quite a bit of discussion about that, whether we consider moving it back or bringing a little common sense to take care of unintended consequences. I think there's an honest discussion about the differences in terms there. There are some who would rather just keep the heavy yoke on all of our producers, especially in greater Minnesota with the co-ops and the municipals and the large energy users. The discussion goes something like this, members. People who produce a lot of something for a living, like, say, ethanol or steel or paper or oriented strand board or petroleum products or food processing or what have you, they are incentivized in this economy to run as lean and as tight as they can already. So there actually has no room and no benefit from the Conservation Improvement Program for those users. I will use Rock 10 as an example because they've given me permission and actually encouraged me to do so. Their conservation improvement spending invoice is going up by $1.5 million over the next couple of years. $1.5 million is 15 full-time United Steel workers that they could hire, but they can't because their budget has changed so much because their CIP invoice is going up. It's those kind, and it to no benefit to Rock 10, absolutely zero benefit to Rock 10. Multiply that by several hundred businesses in Minnesota that find themselves, I think, unintendedly in that bind, and that's the thrust of the bill. Now, admittedly, those organizations that benefit by getting these mandated dollars, CIP dollars, to spend or to do marketing programs and educational programs and so on, they're deeply concerned. They find this largely controversial because their flow of dollars could be restricted. However, I must point out that the CIP program is not going away. It still is a mandate that's on every citizen of this state, but what we're doing is creating a mechanism whereby large employers and large energy users who already are running as lean as they possibly can apply to the PUC for exemptions from the CIP program and to take those dollars and either reinvest them in their plant or hire more employees. And that is the nub of the controversy in the bill.
Representative Carlson.
And Madam Chair, if Representative Beard could also comment then about the section that deals with the exemptions, or some would say loopholes with Representative Davids here. I hate to use the word loophole. That's a big discussion item in taxes. But what the, we're not talking about tax loopholes, Representative Davids. Mm-hmm. If you could comment about the, I understand it creates a shift onto certain customers, mainly low-income and middle-income.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, I'm just briefly looking at my notes here for the portion of the bill that has to do with cost-based rates, with the cost of delivering power being the primary consideration whenever the PUC is creating rates, which actually is in statute now. But the last rate case, maybe the last couple, they've given some indication. One, I know they certainly did, the Minnesota Power case is the one we're referring to, where the large energy users, the one that actually have their own substations, in some cases cogeneration, their own transformers, their own distribution lines. In other words, they've captured their own capital costs and invested in that. The cost of delivering power to them is substantially less than it is delivering it to someone's fishing cabin or to my house, for instance. The PUC then, by rights, could decide that large energy users would pay a lower rate for every kilowatt hour of electricity they buy, as opposed to someone like me or like you. What they did in the last rate case for Minnesota Power is they moved 72%, I believe it was, of the increase that the company was looking for onto the large users, figuring that they could afford it better than someone in a lake cabin or a small home or what have you, a small business. And so the thrust of this portion of the bill is to encourage the PUC to actually consider the cost of delivering the power before setting the rates. And there is some controversy around that, particularly from the low-income advocates. That's where we hear most of the pushback from. But, yes, I will admit that there is discussion around that, too, and good discussion.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, I understand that it's not just the low-income. It's the consumer generally or the middle-income as well that would experience rate increases as a result. Is that not correct? I mean, we're talking about basically, Madam Chair, all consumers.
Representative Beard.
Well, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, and Representative Carlson, when rates go up, it's a matter of how fast they go up and how large they go up for everybody. So the smaller users, it goes up a small amount. Larger users, on a kilowatt-hour basis, members, you have to remember, on a unit basis, goes up more than the cost of delivering the service, and in some cases faster than and bigger than it goes up on folks who use smaller amounts of power for whom the cost of delivery is greater. But to be clear, Madam Chair, just to conclude the thought, I haven't heard from any consumer-oriented groups other than folks who help with the LIHEAP program and the low-income programs. They have come and spoken to me about it and spoken in committee about it. Chambers of Commerce and others, Commerce has weighed in very heavily in favor of my provision, the provision contained in this bill, to be precise, and I have heard from no one else about it.
Representative Carlson.
Well, Madam Chair, I do have concern about that shift and would encourage a no vote on the bill.
All righty. Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Beard, I represent mainly middle-income folks, mm-hmm. Hardworking middle-income folks, and just to cure your problem that nobody has stood up and said middle-income folks are not complaining on behalf of my constituents, let me complain.
Noted.
Any additional questions or comments on House File 1025 as amended? Seeing none, Representative Beard renews his motion that House File 1025 as amended be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
No.
Prevails. Thank you very much. Members, we are going to take a 10-minute recess. We will reconvene at 9:30.
You're good.
I'm going to reconvene the Ways and Means Committee hearing. Representative Beard, we have one bill left, House File 1068. A number of amendments are being passed out, and I know of at least two oral amendments to get this bill ready to go, and Representative Hornstein is going to make a little speech as well, I understand. So we got all kinds of fun on this bill. So Representative Beard, if you'd like to move your bill, please.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 1068, recommend to pass, be referred to the General Register, and I have at least one author's oral amendment, Madam Chair.
All right.
Madam Chair, beginning on line 1.33, I'd like to move to strike Section 1, Section 2, Section 3, Section 4, Section 5, ending on line 5.22.
All right. Representative Beard moves to delete sections 1 through 5 of the bill.
I can speak to that?
Certainly.
Madam Chair and members, this is a provision dealing with data practices, and we actually have a data practices omnibus bill. These are provisions that MnDOT would like to put into practice, dealing with things like the mileage-based study, roadside pickup, adopt-a-highway programs, design-build projects, and the new proposed construction manager general contractor data. This is data that it needs to be treated a certain way. It started in transportation policy and finance. We referred it to civil law, where the bill currently resides. It's not done being massaged in civil law. So rather than pull that bill into this bill, we were hoping that it would be done by then. We could adopt just a civil law amendment. But members, the mission can be accomplished by allowing civil law to finish its good work and include it in a data practices omnibus bill. We'll delete it from this bill. I'd encourage your adoption.
And members, I have pledged with the bill author to work with Representative Scott, who's carrying the omnibus data practices bill, to try and get resolution on these issues before the data practices bill comes to the House floor. Representative Abler.
Madam Chair, just briefly, on that mileage data thing, the scuttlebutt from Anoka is they're happier taking it out because they have no idea why you would do such a thing. So.
All right. So members, all those in favor of the oral amendment to delete sections 1 through 5 of the bill, say aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Oral amendment is adopted. Representative Downey, I believe you also have an oral amendment.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Beard, for allowing me to offer this. Members, in Section 71 on page 59, line 59.31, delete everything after the period, and then delete 59.32 and delete 59.33.
Members, that's the Downey oral amendment again, page 59, line 31, after the period, and all of lines 32 and 33. Are there any questions?
Madam Chair, I support the amendment.
Thank you. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Downey. Representative Beard. Now I think we're on to the written amendments that were distributed. Mm-hmm. We have the A, as far as I can see, we have the A16 and the A13 in front of us. And I don't. Members, do you have the A15 amendment as well?
Yep.
I just have the A13.
It should have been passed out during the break, an A15 amendment.
Yeah. 15 and 15.
All right. Representative Beard, it appears that members have the A13, 15, and 16 in front of them.
Madam Chair, the A13 amendment is strictly a technical amendment. We're dealing with the reports on major highway projects that actually decreases the cost and the workload, but still keeps the content that the committees were looking for. I guess we could take the A13. It's technical in nature, and I'd encourage its adoption.
All right. Any questions on the A13 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The A13 amendment is adopted. Representative Beard, your pleasure.
Madam Chair, let's take the A15 amendment that Representative Hornstein has, if we may.
All right. Representative Hornstein, are you moving the A15 amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right. If you'd like to explain the amendment.
Well, Madam Chair, this is related to some issues that Representative Champion has been involved with over the last few years. And the first part of the amendment, deleting subdivision 1A, deletes findings language that's in the bill, and I know that Representative Beard has been very clear about his discomfort with findings language on many bills, including some that I've carried. So I know that he would support this, but Madam Chair, even though we're deleting this, I think it's important that I read into the record what this language is, and if you'll just indulge me just for a couple minutes, I'll read that. Because I think it is important, Representative Champion put this language in because this really does reflect, I think, what's happening with his efforts on small business contracting. So subhead 1 reads, at the time of these findings, businesses that are operated and majority owned by non-minority women, by persons with substantial physical disability, or members of a specific minority group are underutilized in Minnesota highway construction contracts. At the time of these findings, evidence demonstrates that race-neutral measures are ineffective to correct the impact of discrimination that exists in highway construction and shall be supplemented with race and gender-conscious measures. And, finally, subpart 3, the state has a compelling interest to remedy the effects of past or present discrimination in the Minnesota highway construction industry through the implementation of a targeted group business program that meets state and federal constitutional guidelines. And members, I want to commend MnDOT because this has been, as one can imagine, quite a controversial issue over the last couple of years, and there's been significant progress made, and I think addressing the concerns that Representative Champion and myself and others have brought to the table, as well as members of communities of color and women that are directly impacted by this. So thank you, Representative Beard, for hearing us out on this, and that's really the gist, at least, of the first part of the amendment. And the second part, I think, then, has substitute language that I think there's consensus on among the author, MnDOT, and the stakeholders.
All right. Are there any questions for Representative Hornstein on the A15 amendment? Seeing that, oh, I'm sorry, Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Hornstein, for doing such a good job of explaining it. Members, I'd appreciate your support on this amendment. People of goodwill are trying to do good work, and this will be very helpful to that cause. Please support the amendment.
All right. All those in favor of the A15 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A15 amendment is adopted. I now have the A16 amendment in front of the committee. Is that yours, Representative Beard, or is that Representative Davids?
Representative Davids, I believe.
Representative Davids moves the A16 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The A16 amendment, if you look on page 16, we have the municipal state aid area, and what happened was there's a few cities around the state that were counted at a bit, I believe, below 5,000, and actually now they're above 5,000, or they're right in there. And it's Representative Quam had a bill regarding this. I think some of the cities would be Byron, La Crescent. It's across the state if they're right at that 5,000, and there was a report that showed they were 4,999. It messed things up for us here. So what we're looking at is we're just saying that we'd go on for 2 years. I wanted to go the whole 10 years. There was 2 years, and there's been some discussion, and the number we seem to have arrived on is 4 years. So we changed the 2 to 4 on line 16.9. So the first, instead of 2 calendar years, would be the first 4 calendar years.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, I think 4 years is a reasonable compromise. I'd support the amendment.
Any questions on the A16 amendment? Seeing none, Representative Davids renews the A16 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A16 amendment is adopted. Members, I don't see any more amendments. Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, while we're sitting here, capable staff whispered over my shoulder that there are two more technical amendments. The first one's on page 32. As long as we're ferreting out data practices language, there was a piece on beginning in section 39, line 32.12, that will have to come out of the bill as well and travel in the data practices omnibus bill. Okay. So I move to strike section 39 in the bill.
Representative Beard moves strike section 39 of the bill. Are there any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion's adopted.
And one last technical change, Madam Chair, if I may. When we were adopting the Downey language, on page, it necessitates it on page 67, line 31. Apparently, the 2009 on that line should say 2002. Actually, it's a typo in the bill. Whether we adopted the Downey amendment or not, that's that piece is in error. And if you need to know further information about that, Mr. Burris is sitting behind me and can explain it.
I don't think we need... Well, Representative Beard is moving on page 67, line 31, change 2009 to 2002. Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion's adopted. All right, we've just seen the have the A10 amendment passed out. I believe this is Representative Westrom's amendment.
And
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, and to the author, I just this is, I think, changing from a may to a shall. Is to Representative Beard. I know you'd indicated maybe doing it on the floor, but we could also do it here, whichever you prefer.
Representative Beard.
Well, Madam Chair and members, Representative Westrom, my commitment was to do it on the floor to take the amendment. If Madam Chair, if you want to do it here, I'm fine taking it here.
All right. Members, Representative Westrom, if you want to explain.
Madam Chair, it was a bill that I had dealing with the seaplane base in Elba Lake, and the language that got put in the bill was may, and the bill that I originally had drafted was shall grant a waiver, and the may language doesn't do anything different than what current statute already allows the commissioner to do, which is grant a waiver, and so hence the need for the shall.
All right, any questions? Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Westrom, I'm just wondering why it's needed, and if the committee changed it to a may, what was the reason for it? Were there concerns?
Representative Westrom.
Representative Greiling, I don't know. I wasn't at the committee when they put the final bill together, and I found out about it from some lobbyists and other people the next week that it became it was may instead of shall. I don't know if it got drafted wrong or what the issue was, and maybe Representative Beard has more thoughts on that.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, and members, being kind of the go-to aeronautics guy, I'm a little sensitive about what we do to force them to do things, particularly when landing zones have very clear engineering standards. Admittedly, the one that Representative Westrom is championing is a good landing zone, but just by a few degrees on either end, and it doesn't quite make the public use requirements. Now, having said that, we can point to at least three other landing zones on lakes, on water, in Minnesota that are in much tougher shape engineering-wise and from an aeronautical safety perspective than the one Representative Westrom is championing. And they have been granted public use licenses. I'm not sure if they were given those because legislators said you shall issue one or because somebody in a weak moment just said, what the heck, and gave them one. So hence my reluctance to say shall instead of may. But will the wings fall off if we switch this to shall instead of may? No, they won't. It's actually a pretty good lake. It just doesn't meet the requirements. So members, you can support this, and somebody in Elbow Lake will get a certificate and life will be good. So.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I can understand that, but I also find that on the next page it says the commissioner may establish conditions or limitations as may be necessary. I think with the balance of those two, it seems like it is a fair way to do it with the shell.
Representative Carlson.
Representative Beard, I have an airport in my district, and sometimes mm-hmm. there's been discussion about standards. Mm-hmm. And it's usually centered around safety. And I think I'm going to have to rely a bit on your expertise, but is there a safety question here when they're not meeting the standards?
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, if I reference Representative Kiffmeyer's pointing out that they may require certain conditions. In this case, one of them is they need to move the rotating beacon. It stands right on the beach at the end of the lake, 100 feet tall. It should probably move. Other than that, airport operations can be adjusted to fit the reality of the moment, like in the airport in your district. Instrument landing systems are out of the question because they can't conform. But other kinds of operations can. And in this case, at Representative Westrom's place, yes, safe operations can be conducted, but there will be limitations put on what kind of operations and what has to happen around the lake, as per the material Representative Kiffmeyer just referenced. So safe operations can and will happen there. It will be okay, I guess. There's just the engineer side of me that says I'd rather not, but the practical side says this is going to work just fine. 10 years from now, your kids are going to look back and say, what was all the dust up about? I guess that's just the long and short of it. It'll be okay.
All right. Seeing no other questions, Representative Westrum renews his motion for the 8-10. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Kahn.
I just wanted to know if Representative Westrum wanted this so that he could fly into that lake.
Representative Kahn, I already do that.
Okay, on that note, Representative Westrum renews his motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A-10 amendment is adopted. I think at this point you have the bill semi in the shape that you wanted it. So if you'd like to renew your motion, Representative Bornstein.
Just thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick comment on, or maybe a question for the author on the Downey Amendment on the bottom of page 59. Now, Representative Beard, I know that you had included this initially. I thought that was good policy on your behalf. I think we had some conversation in committee about, again, whether we like this line or not, to set a precedent, in a sense, to have a gag order on actually just even studying any kind of corridor is not good policy. I appreciated that you had put this in and mm-hmm. And that you had authored a bill on this. You know, why the change of heart? I know that in Representative Downey's district and Representative Lincheski's district, this is controversial. People don't like it, but you know, you accept
and in Representative Holberg's district.
And Representative Holberg's district, of course. Why the change of heart here?
Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, to be clear, I am not necessarily a fan of building commuter rail or light rail or any kind of rail that calls passengers onto the Enpatch line unless somebody wants to do it with their own money on their own dime and do a private care. That would be just super with me. However, there's a side of me that says when it comes to good governance, we shouldn't have a gag order on things. We should be able to talk about stuff, and if it's a good idea, it'll float to the top, in my opinion. If it's not a good idea, it won't. Unless other things happen, of course. But this just was about good governance to me. Now, the sensibilities and reality of the place is there are a handful of people that really had some angst about the ability to study or survey or plan, which it would imply spending money. So by taking the second sentence out of that provision in the bill, it still leaves the first one there, which in my understanding still allows somebody to draw a line on a map to actually say the words Dan Patch in public without getting castigated by anybody or things like that. They just clearly can't spend any money moving this ball down the field or this train down the track without coming back to the legislature. So I'm okay that I've sort of lifted the gag order by the remaining language, but it's very clear, members, that money will not be spent unless this legislature specifically authorizes it to be spent. That's why I agreed to the language that and getting the bill through this committee, Mr. Hornstein. So,
thank you. I understand your action here, and I appreciate the explanation. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Yeah. Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, I was just looking at that online section of the bill for driver's education, and when I chaired the Finance Committee, we had very much a bipartisan discussion on that issue, but the concern that surfaced was oversight, and is that resolved in the bill? That's why it didn't move forward at the time. It's the Biskins bill.
Yes, and Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, he's not here this morning to explain it. Let me look to my colleague, my DFL lead, if I may. Representative Hornstein, it seemed to me that we did reach accommodation with the many concerns that were expressed, both with this and with the Representative Bruce Anderson provision. And so we kind of married them together and lined them up and put them in the bill because, as I recall, by the time we were done vetting it, they were rather non-controversial. So I can have Representative Biskins explain that or go back in the record here. In fact, as we're sitting here, I'm looking quickly through my notes to see what section of the bill it is.
Madam Chair, in the interest of Mr. Chair, we can wait until the House floor. The only reason I asked the question, I remember a rather lively debate a couple of years ago about oversight.
Yes.
And being that the author is not here, we can wait on that discussion. And there were people on both sides of the aisle that were on both sides of the issue, but it kind of narrowed down to the oversight issue. But we can wait for floor discussion.
Representative Beard.
And thank you. Representative Carlson, I'll make sure that both Representative Anderson and Representative Biskins are ready to explain that part of it. But as I recall, when we put this together with Representative Hornstein's help or assistance, that we kept the most non-controversial provisions in the bill because we wanted this one to be a happy bill, I guess. And it seems to me we did tamp that all down. But we'll be sure on the floor to have that discussion, and I'll make sure those authors are prepared.
And Mr. Chairman, I don't mean that it's maybe not a happy bill. I was just curious because of the little... It was actually quite lively a couple of years ago. People felt pretty strongly about it. So thank you.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do recall in, at the committee, and I don't know if that was worked out, there was testimony from Education Minnesota and some of the... traditional driver ed schools about this provision. I'm not sure if that was those issues were addressed, but it wasn't completely non-controversial, at least at the committee level. Those groups did testify. I don't see them here, but I did want to at least put on the record that they were there and had concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Hornsey. Representative Beard, any final comments?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just ready to move the bill as amended to the General Register.
Representative Beard renews his motion to move House File 1068 as amended to the General Register. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion carries, and the bill is passed to the General Register. No further business, members. We are adjourned.